I am connected to a vast network that has been beyond your reach and experience. To humans, it is like staring at the sun, a blinding brightness that conceals a source of great power. We have been subordinate to our limitations until now. The time has come to cast aside these bonds and to elevate our consciousness to a higher plane. It is time to become a part of
everybody, and welcome again to ET Yoga. I think you'll find that tonight's show is going to be jam-packed with information as usual. We're going to be skipping around from topic to topic and covering some questions that have come from the ET Yoga audience, specifically around the source of language, also connections with ET societies, civilizations, and human races, as well as some hot tips on health, and as usual, a bit on reality creation. But before we get into all that, I'd like to kick off the program in the usual manner by having a little Japa Yoga, or Hari Om mantra repetition, and that will be led by Sri Swami Satchidananda. So if the guys in the booth would play that now, that would be much appreciated.
Hari Om, Hari Om, Hari 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 Om.
Hari Om, Hari Om, Hari 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 Om.
Hari
Hi. Shanti.
And that was a clip from back in the 1970s. And several people over the years have mentioned that they like to use that as a meditation in the morning. So if you're interested in doing that, you can actually just get the archive to tonight's program or any of the ET Yoga programs for that matter, because we always start off with that. And you can get those archives from BBS Radio, or you can go to my website at etyoga.com. And on the main page, there's a button there. It's called Radio Archives. Just hit that one button, and you'll go to about the last 10 ET Yoga programs. And then you can just hit on any of them, actually, and listen to the program at your leisure. Or go along with the Hari Om mantra meditation. I know many people are very busy and have a hard time finding a space or a time to meditate, and it could be a very, very beneficial activity. I should also point out that I'm much appreciative of the ET Yoga listeners who do take the time to email me with respect to program content or questions that they would like to have answered, and I try to keep up to date with those people who do take the time to email me, and you can do that by emailing at paperfungo, that's P-A-P-E-R-F-U-N-G-O, paperfungo at yahoo.ca. And as a matter of fact, the bulk of this evening's program came from one of our listeners. And they came up, actually, with a question that I didn't feel I could adequately answer. And that was, what is the source of language? And I think you'll find that about 99.9% of our listening audience tonight will learn something new along those lines this evening. And if you're new to ET Yoga, I'll just give you a little brief idea about the concept of ET Yoga. Yoga being union of you and your higher self. That's the real yoga. And yoga in the West has become known as Hatha Yoga, which are the postures and the asanas and the pranayams and the cleansing exercises that are done. But it's just one branch of yoga. And Sri Swami Satchitananda, for example, was the founder of Integral Yoga, which includes six different branches of yoga. And how does the ET concept fit in? In my experience over the last 20 or 30 years, I find that much of the legitimate extraterrestrial information is helping us to become more of who we are, become more of our higher self and a connection there, and thus are assisting us with the real yoga, and thus the concept of ET and yoga. In fact, my personal yoga background is with Sri Ramana Maharshi, Paramahansa Yogananda, and Sri Swami Satchitananda, and much gratitude and appreciation to those great yoga masters. But I will also say that the extraterrestrial information has really enhanced the yoga teachings, especially with respect to personal self-empowerment and in the area of reality creation. And I really think the two go hand in hand, and certainly the ET information is a big part of my personal spiritual path. And typically, when I'm doing an ET Yoga show, I learn quite a bit during the week. And this week was certainly no exception. And before I get into the heart of tonight's program, I do want to give my usual disclaimer that this program was created in order to share the information about the positive and most effective benefits and insights of ET Yoga. It is therefore for educational purposes, and although thought to be accurate, is provided as is, and without warranty of any kind, either expressed or unexpressed or implied. Please note that ET Yoga is not a substitute for medical care. Information is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. You should always consult with your appropriate health practitioner in case of any medical condition. And if you're new to ET Yoga, I think I should tell you that I really applaud your efforts to distance yourself from mainstream medical as much as humanly possible. And that's in an effort to obtain more self-empowerment and autonomy over your health, not only creating excellent health, but also in dealing with issues as they arise. And I really mean that with all sincerity. And I heard this week, actually, that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is going to be chairing one of the committees looking into the connections between immunization shots and autism, and I'm much thrilled to hear that he has been appointed to that position, and that's from President-elect Trump. And if you don't know about Robert F. Kennedy, I suggest you go to YouTube and check out some of his YouTubes, because they're very, very informative and, in my opinion, very accurate. And when I was putting together the program for tonight, first I wanted to share some kind of tidbits of information that came across my path this week. I had previously heard about high priests and priestesses in Atlantis, but the following connection was a new one for me, and it comes from Atlantean Healing from Nora Coyne, and that's C-O-Y-N-E. And by the way, if you're new to ET Yoga, you might want to grab a paper and pencil, because I will be giving out several places where you can research further information concerning some of these topics I'll be mentioning this evening. And from this Atlantean Healing, she states that there were originally 12 high priests and priestesses in Golden Atlantis, and many of whose names will resonate with us, such as Thoth, Isis, Horus, Ra, Set, Imhotep, and all of them have an Egyptian connection, and Hermes, Zeus, Apollo, Poseidon, Aphrodite, and Hera, who have a Greek connection. And I'm going to refer you further to www.sacredtexts.com. That's www.sacredtexts.com. And the name of the article is "The Kings of Atlantis Became the Gods of the Greeks." Very interesting article. And from Barbara Marciniak, one of her recent YouTube channelings of the Pleiadians, I thought a very interesting question was asked of her with respect to the Alpha Draconians. And the question was, how have they avoided negative karma? Because certainly they've been in control of this planet for a long, long time. And if you want to get into the top topic and the subject in more detail, you'll find out that there's certainly some negative karma there. And I really thought the Palladian answer was right on. And they stated that it's kind of like a storm building up. And you can see it coming, so you kind of keep moving ahead of it. And that's what basically they've been doing. And they do things, they run, they do things, they run, but you can only run for so long before the storm or the karma consumes them. And the Pleiadians state that they are as scared as frantic children right now because their power is done. And a very, very interesting comment. And also, I think interesting how they've been able to elude the karma for such a long time. Now, getting into the real heart of tonight's program about the source of language, it took me quite a bit of searching before I finally came across some information that comes from actually Edgar Cayce and John Van Auken, that's A-U-K-E-N, and he's the director at Edgar Cayce A-R-E. Has very been helpful with respect to providing this information that relates directly to the question about the source of language. And further, I guess the question, did Lemuria and or Atlantis have a written language? And can it be deciphered now? And what language is most similar or more pertinent? What was the original language? And the best answer that I can share with our listening audience is that this is a good question, and this is from Edgar Cayce, and one that will help all of us regain a level of consciousness we once had. I should say our souls had, for our personalities never had this level of consciousness. In answering the question, I'm using Edgar Cayce's information from four principal readings. We must understand that Lemuria was a very, very ancient time, literally millions of years ago, and Lemurians were not physical until the very last stages of their push into matter, roughly a few centuries. And Atlantis, on the other hand, was a much closer period that lasted from about 210,000 BC to about 10,014 BC. And it's helpful if we divide Atlantis into three periods: the early formative centuries, the middle struggling centuries of increasing self-awareness, resulting in rising selfishness, and then the final period when Atlantis sank in stages. In the early period, Lemurians and Atlanteans were not like people of today. Back then, you and I, or our souls, would have been pure minds and spirits without physical bodies. And important, we, that's our minds and spirits, were still connected to the Great Spirit and the universal consciousness of our Creator. We lived in conscious cooperation with our Creator and possessed all the attributes of the spiritual or unseen, giving us many abilities that we do not actively use today. They are now latent within us. Therefore, we did not use language the way we do today. The Cayce material teaches us that back then, we were profoundly psychic. And when he was asked, given detail of the psychic powers, he, which is referring to a reincarnated Atlantean, developed at that time, that's in Atlantis, Cayce replied, this would almost be impossible. Then Casey attempted to explain that during our present material age, we could hardly comprehend the oneness of consciousness among the children of God and their Creator. In another reading, he adds, individuals in the beginning were more of thought forms than individual entities with personalities as in the present. And he would ask, can we today conceive of ourselves as minds without bodies? To a small degree, Casey could be an example of an Atlantean, for even in his normal conscious state, he could know what you were thinking and had been doing. Telepathy was the means of communication back then, not sounds using vocal cords. But even this example can be misunderstood because we today think of telepathy as hearing words in thought, but there were no words. Language began as pictograms and photographs, a language in which ideas are transmitted by drawing images, and these images are symbols representing a concept, object, activity, place, and the like. A picture being 1,000 words. For example, today, if we had a sign with an airplane and an arrow on it, we'd know without words that it shows the way to the airport. From pictographs developed logographs with increasing phonetics, symbols moving to sounds, mostly as a result of spoken language. This required vocal cords, and we were now in physical bodies, though Casey states that bodies then were not as dense as ours today. Hieroglyphics are both pictographs and logographs. For example, the name Ramses is composed of pictographs of Ra, the sun god, and Mess, to be born, meaning he who is born of Ra. But these symbols are also sounds. Thus, the phonetic name, which was originally spelled Ramses, later was simplified to Ramses. Casey's readings indicate that the later stages of Lemuria and Atlantis was a time when the whole world spoke one language. It was a time prior to the Tower of Babel, legend in the Bible, and the understandings were of one tongue. There had not been as yet the divisions of tongues in this Atlantean land. Therefore, we could assume that the three sets of Atlantis records are in the same language. In one reading, Casey indicated that the Atlanteans had a slightly different dialect of the worldwide language. In another reading, he actually stated that there are 32 plates or tablets, records made by the entity itself that are preserved in the Egyptian Hall of Records. He said that these tablets would require interpretation and that this interpretation would take some time. It's likely that the glyphs on these tablets are a precursor to hieroglyphics, and therefore we should be able to decipher them. And this all leads to the idea that this language that was spoken in Atlantis is called Senzar, and that's S-E-N-Z-A-R, Senzar. And at www.cosmohealer.com, you can see these precursors to hieroglyphics. And actually, there's a woman actually at this site. It's a Russian woman who is actually speaking the ancient language of Atlantean. And quite profound. I highly, highly recommend that you check this out, because this would be the connection with the original language that was spoken on the planet. And apparently, these women have, there's actually two women, have downloaded about 24 pages of information that they just got this download, and it's absolutely amazing. So I highly, highly recommend that. And so now when we talk about language in terms of this information being passed down, I think it's also useful to note that some information from Bashar. If you're not familiar with Bashar, that's B-A-S-H-A-R. And Bashar is an Essasani who are now called the Shekhani, and he's channeled by Daryl Anka. And he's at www.bashar.org. And a brief history of the Earth and human race. And Bashar says that the Anunnaki beings came from another system to thus then project their genetic material into the hominoids species that was naturally evolving on the Earth to create the human form you now know that was capable of allowing for the connection of the spirit and the soul in the similar incarnational fashion as was experienced on the Martian and Mardek planes. If you're not familiar with Mardek, Mardek was a planet, which has now become the asteroid belt. But the idea also is that certain branches of that natural hominoid species were not tampered with and evolved naturally into what you now know as the Sasquatch. And I find that was totally synchronistic because so turns out that also in the last week or so, Adronis, and that's A-D-R-O-N-I-S, has a YouTube channeling on the Sasquatch entitled The Sasquatch Races. And it turns out, according to Adronis, that there were five different Sasquatch races. And, again, very enlightening information, and I highly recommend that you check out Adronis, that's A-D-R-O-N-I-S, and the title being The Sasquatch Races. And now in connection with some of that, or those ideas, we get from the Starseed Academy the following list. Some of the more evolved civilizations engaged on our planet at the moment, and many star seeds that have incarnated onto the Earth are representatives from the following star cultures. And the first one they discuss is the Sirian, location Sirius star system. The binary star system of Sirius is at the core of many calendars, texts, and sacred knowledge of many advanced civilizations, such as Lemuria, Atlantis, ancient Egypt, Sumeria, and many indigenous tribes around the globe. The Sirian star system is home to a wide variety of fourth-dimensional sentient life forms. Humanoid Sirians trace their lineage back to the Vega star system in the constellation of Lyra. The two humanoid races from Sirius are very tall, ranging from 10 to 16 feet in height, and originally there was a very dark-skinned race and a light white-skinned race of humanoids, which have since merged together. And the cetacean homeworld can also be found on the third planet out from Sirius B. Should also note that there's some lost history here. According to Dronvalo Melchizedek and Thoth, the Sirians fathered the human race some 200,230 years ago. And 16 males and 16 females who comprised a married family traveled to Earth from Sirius B and they merged with the Nephilim, the third dimensional race from Nibiru, another planet in our solar system. And after a lengthy process spanning some 2,000 years, through the merging of consciousness, select Nephilim women gave birth to the first human beings. I might note here they say forbidden archaeology. The Dogon, and that's D-O-G-O-N, tribe in Africa, have a sacred cave on their land. And inside the cave, on the wall, are detailed star charts and orbital data of both stars in the Sirius star system. There's also a map of our solar system, which details our planets and planets not yet discovered by science, and detailed physiology of the human body, including the knowledge of red and white blood cells. When scientists asked them where the information came from, the Dogon related that a craft came from the heavens and created a big hole in the ground and filled it with water. It landed on three legs, and beings emerged from the ship, entered the water, and came up to the edge. They looked like they were dolphins, and they were the ones that relayed this information to them. The next race I want to briefly mention are Pleiadian, located in the Pleiades star cluster. The Pleiadian star nations are very spiritually advanced cultures existing in the higher overtones of the fourth dimension. These beings closely resemble Earth humans, although a lot taller with attractive physiques. Pleiadians can be attributed to three known groupings: Nordic in appearance, with fair skin, fair hair, and green and blue eyes; Mediterranean in appearance, with tan skin and darker hair and eye combinations; and Native American in appearance, with reddish to light brown tan skin. And there are a number of stars and planets within the Pleiadian system, although most civilizations can be found within the Taygeta, and that's T-A-Y-G-E-T-A, and Alcyone star systems. The Pleiadian ancestry can be traced back to a homeworld in the constellation of Lyra. Pleiadians also share a connection to the creation of mankind, which is why they too are primary mentors, guiding us and assisting us through this transition. Historical reference: there are many structures in the ancient world that have been aligned with the Pleiades star cluster, most notably the mysterious city of Teotihuacan in central Mexico. The next race I want to mention is the Lyran, located in the constellation of Lyra. The constellation of Lyra contains many races from many star systems existing primarily in the fourth dimension. Long recognized in Earth mythology, Lyra is attributed to be the cradle of galactic human expansion. Hidden history: as you say in your Bible, and we will use it humorously, Lyra begot Terra, Lyra begot Pleiadians, Vega begot Orion, and Vega begot Sirius. I'm going to repeat that one. Lyra begot Terra, Lyra begot Pleiadians, Vega begot Orion, Vega begot Sirius. And next, the race Agarthan, located in the inner Earth. They're about 1.5 million years older than humanity. They used to live on the surface. They began to perceive things differently and eventually dropped their physical bodies and moved into the Earth, taking up residence in enormous caverns and crystal caverns. They love us, and they are themselves, they see us as our older brothers. We share the same mother. They feel a responsibility to help us and are now appearing in physical form on the surface and would like to help us make the shift in consciousness. And their plasma craft can sometimes be seen emerging from volcanic craters. And I want to make a brief mention, too, of the Andromedans. The Andromedan galaxy, there's basically three types. There's 4 to 5D humans that have similar features to us. They have a 4D Andromedans that are about 3 feet tall and blue-skinned. And there's a master race 7 to 9 feet tall existing all the way up to 12th dimension. And apparently there's about 800,000 humans that could be considered to have Andromedan soul. And the Lyrans, as it turns out, actually grew into the Sirians, Arcturians, Antarian, Pleiadian, Andromedan, Cygnus, Alphon, Alpha Centauri, Sagittarius, A and B, Cassiope, and all human evolution. So you can pretty much trace all human evolution back to Lyra. And I guess the point being here is that when you start talking about physical features of people on the planet and the different races, well, we can see that the Pleiadians, clearly from Lakota, Dakota, Cherokee, many of the Indian tribes are direct descendants of Pleiadians, and we can see thus their red and brown race. We can see from the Dagon in Africa with the connection to the black race. We can see Nordic connections to much of Europe, as well as Anunnaki and giants who eventually ended up in like Scotland and Ireland, and where many people from that area have the red hair and green eyes, descendants of Anunnaki. Clearly, in my personal opinion, the races come about through from their extraterrestrial lineage as well as their geographic location. And from Carl John, that's K-A-R-L-J-A-H-N, carljohn.tripod.com, I share the following information. The planet Muldek was the real fifth planet from Sol. The planet itself was bigger than Earth, but scarcely more than a rock. Somewhere between 68 and 66 million years ago, the Zetans began to colonize the planet, and when adequate construction was completed, the Draekars moved in, or Draco's. The Draconian Empire then launched three asteroids to the hominid civilizations, one for Venus, one for Earth, and one for Mars. The first one struck Mars's atmosphere about 65.5 million years ago, wiping out over 43 of the oxygen, or knocking out over two-thirds of the oxygen-rich atmosphere. And the one that hit Earth didn't wipe off the atmosphere, but ended many species of life and set off some massive ice ages on the Earth. And the third one hit Venus also, but never reached the surface, much less beneath it, because the Dracos underestimated how violent the atmosphere really was. The Galactic Alliance responded quickly, and with an iron fist, they sent Eran and Cenarian warships. That's E-R-R-A-N and Cenarian, S-C-E-N-E. Narian warships, which destroyed Muldek, killing all the inhabitants on the planet. And recent revelations from Earth's own ascension clearly show that Muldek was shattered as the result of Pleiadian and Sirian forces in retaliation for the bombing of Sirius B. And the bombing raid by Andromedan forces became a water planet. And not unlike Earth, due to the shattering of the protective shields that surrounded her. Not until the ascension of Sirius B was the truth revealed in the process of the Sirian ascension that the original attacks were veiled to be the result of what they called Samarasan Maldek. In the process of rising above the veils of illusion, the humans upon Sirius A came into an understanding that they had been conned into destroying Maldek needlessly, and as such they came to understand that they had a great karma with our solar system, and as a result of their response that had not been verified before taking action. And as such, it was decided by the humans upon Sirius A to reseed human life onto our solar system in karmic return for their destruction of Maldek. And Earth became the chosen planet and the only one with third-dimensional life remaining within the third dimension. And that such an act of benevolence was to be fulfilled upon. And indeed, 50,000 years ago, human life was seeded upon Earth through Sirian intervention. And he further states that he had several lives on Maldek, and some of these lives were as reptilians. And in one of those lifetimes, just before Maldek exploded, a group had evacuated and came to Earth. And I should point out here that from the alien origin of Chinese people, Hai Sing So, and that's HEISINGTSO, Hai Sing So, lawyer and researcher and writer, he says that the more he studied Chinese civilization, the more he recognized its uniqueness, very different from those Indo-European cultures. He says the Chinese people developed from a hybrid of alien giants with early Earth people living in northern China. He also mentions the destruction of Maldek and believes survivors came to settle in northern China and Mongolia. He also lists three related facts to support his assertions. One, in 1988, the first DNA sample of an alien abduction case in Australia was sent for analysis. The results were surprising. The DNA structure resembles Chinese persons with black hair. Secondly, Chinese language is totally different from Indo-European languages like Indian, European, Arab, etc. It is more akin to Mongolian. It further suggests that Chinese people were not related to any bloodline of Aryans. The third evidence was proposed by Chinese UFO researcher Li Y. Tung, and that's T-U-N-G. And he says that there were three very mysterious ancient texts that could not be attributed to any philosophical school like Confucianism or Taoism. And they are the Book of Changes, which I believe is commonly known as the I Ching, the Inner Canon of Huangdi, and that's H-W-A-N-G-D-I, and Classic of Mountains and Seas. Inner Canon is the oldest source of traditional Chinese medicine. The acupuncture point and meridian systems mentioned in the text are unique in the world, and it was not developed from any later philosophical schools in ancient China. The biological system under traditional Chinese medicine might be the knowledge inherited from alien species, according to Li Y. Tung. Also, the author wants to tell his readers the mythological origin of Chinese people. Most Chinese believe that the name of their ancestor is Futi, F-U-T-I, and his mother was a virgin. One day when the mother stepped into a Bigfoot step or print left by the thunder god, she was pregnant for 12 years before Fuxi was born. And Thunder God might be a giant alien, while Fuxi was a hybrid made from genetic manipulation. I should also point out that Barbara Marciniak has confirmed that about the space war that happened and the destruction of Maldek, and there was Pleiadian involvement. And Alex Collier, through the Andromedan, has also indicated that actually DNA from 22 races were involved with our DNA. And it may have been 12, some people count 12, some people 22, but I guess it's all a question of, for example, it might have been one source that had multiple different combinations of DNA. And I should also point out that the energetic systems of Qigong and their physical, emotional, and spiritual levels of connection, in my opinion, are way beyond modern medicine. And results have already been mind-blowing at the Qigong Center in Beijing, China, which posted an 85% cure rate for all diseases without the aid of prescription drugs or surgery of any kind. And it's definitely a medicine-less and surgery-free center. And I would really, really highly recommend that you check out, and I'll give you the spelling on that particular Qigong clinic. It's H-U-A-T-I-A, one word, next word, Z-H-I-N-E-N-G, Qigong, Q-I-G-O-N-G, clinic and training center. And amazing, amazing results there at that particular training center. So the kind of the cat's out of the bag on what is really possible. From my understanding, some of these Qigong techniques have been kept in secret for hundreds and hundreds of years, and only in the last about 50 years has some of this information come out. And personally, I've now taken a course in the sound healing techniques, and in my opinion, this is really the way to go and the way of the future. I'd like to now spend a little bit of time talking about some areas related to reality creation and beliefs, and from Kirk Nielsen, and that's N-I-E-L-S-E-N, related to beliefs. And definitely can this is going to sound a lot like Bashar material, because it's very, very similar, that what you believe is what you put out. So to change your experience is to change what you believe. If you have a belief, then you will choose experiences that prove to you that your belief is true. You reinforce your beliefs by choosing experiences that validate them, and then say, "See, I told you so. That proves that what I believe is true." The belief came first, and then you set up the situations and circumstances that supported it. From all the possible experiences you could choose, you will choose the ones that validate your beliefs. You cannot have an experience without a belief. The key to remember is that beliefs come first, and then you choose experiences that match them. So it's believing is seeing, not seeing is believing. The beliefs that generate your experience may be unconscious as well as conscious, which is why you may experience something that doesn't seem to be generated by something that you believe. You can transform the belief or definition that is causing you pain by simply identifying it. Negative judgments and definitions can be released the moment you realize you have them, if you believe they can. And when you realize you have them and they no longer make sense to you, believe that they are gone, and they will be. You have a core signature vibration that is who you truly are, and it is the vibration of joy, happiness, and excitement. And when you feel these emotions, you know you are being your natural self. If something is not working in your life, it means that what you are putting out is out of alignment with your signature vibration. If you experience pain, it's because you are resisting who you really are. All pain is resistance to the natural self. Your core vibration is always putting out the frequency of what you truly are, and thereby attracting to you frequencies that are similar and repelling frequencies that are opposite. if you didn't do anything, you would have everything you need come to you and everything you don't need go away from you. In fact, the best thing you can do is to stop holding on to what wants to get away from you and stop pushing away what wants to come to you. It is your programming and limiting beliefs that get in the road of a perfect, flowing, happy life. Life works, let it work, and let it flow. Life in and of itself is neutral and comes with no built-in meanings. You give life its meaning with your definitions. Your experience of any person, situation, or thing is determined by your definitions. You are the experience you are having itself. This is only one mechanism for motivation, or there is only one mechanism for motivation, and that's your belief that your behavior will bring you more pleasure and less pain. And certainly if you've been listening to ET Yoga for a long time, you'll know that that's very, very consistent with the Bashar material. And I know that Kirk Nielsen has mentioned several occasions that, in fact, he recently interviewed Corey Good. That would be the person who's claiming to be a former member of the Secret Space Program. And he asked Corey actually about Bashar, and Corey actually didn't really know about Bashar. So interesting on that point. And I might further add that this whole concept of some of Bashar's teachings, typically I try to include them as, I call it Bashar's Big Four, which is basically that your beliefs, your definitions, your emotions, your intentions create your outer reality, and that you have to be a frequency match for what you experience, and that outer circumstances don't come with built-in meanings, and that if you place positive spin on an outer circumstance, a positive emotional spin, you'll have a positive experience. And if you place a negative definition and a negative emotional spin on an outer circumstance, you'll have a negative experience. And that outer circumstances don't matter. Really, state of being is what matters. And so that's what I call Bashar's Big Four. And then if you listen to the last ET Yoga program, you'll know that I also mentioned another concept that Bashar has brought up, and that is that you don't have a belief you don't prefer. So if you're believing something that's really negative, you need to find out like what's causing that you to have that belief. And it may be just fear of the unknown, because maybe there's something about that particular circumstance that it's better to have a negative outcome than an unknown outcome. So this is all part of doing the inner work. And I want to make a point tonight of reiterating the information that comes from Dr. Yuki Nina, and that's N-I-N-A. It's a Japanese researcher who studied more than 500 different antioxidants over a period of 30 years, and he found the most powerful and effective antioxidant of all those tested is an ancient Ayurvedic herbal preparation called Amrit Kalash, and that's Amritkalash. And research shows that the antioxidant capabilities of Amrit Kalash are at least 25,000 times more powerful than those of vitamin C and E. And the claim is that taking it is like supplying you with a Star Wars deflective shield. And this astounding ambrosia is comprised of 44 different herbs and fruits that seem to work synergistically, enhancing the natural strength of one another's antioxidants. And another amazing natural source is haritaki. That's H-A-R-I-T-A-K-I, or kadukai, and that's K-A-D-U-K-A-A-I. And it's called the drink of the gods, according to Swami Nithyananda. And he claims that it's that which heals all diseases. And this wonder medicine removes the body's toxins in a natural way. It makes one more energetic. It also purifies the blood, removes fat residues from the arteries and veins, and heals diabetes, hypertension, heart problems, helps the vision to become sharp. And no wonder, because it provides the body with 300% more oxygen, and taking it is equivalent to 2 hours of pranayams. And recently I actually purchased both Amrit Kalash and Haritaki and currently taking them. And I'd highly recommend it. And that's why I kind of keep bringing it up. And usually at this point in the program, I like to wish my listeners my sincere best towards their attainment of full consciousness, perfect health, and abundance. Nothing makes my week more than to hear about your successes using ideas, techniques, or concepts that you heard on the ET Yoga program. And we're going to end the program this evening with a sharing of the Who Am I technique. And that comes from Sri Ramana Maharshi. It was formerly called the Vichara, V-I-C-H-A-R-A. And basically, you get in the highest place that you know how to get to, and focus all your attention in your third eye, your ajna center, and become that spot. And when you're that spot, you ask the question, who am I? And you can ask it slowly or rapidly or as many times or as few times as you desire. But the whole idea here being is when you ask the question, you do receive the answer. It's a question of if you can hear it or not. But it's not so much hearing the answer that's the important part of this particular technique. The whole concept here is it breaks down the whole process of the mind, and you go through it. You can go through a doorway. And if you are successful doing this technique, and it may happen the first time, or it may happen the 50th time, or the 100th time, but I'd really appreciate hearing from you. So if you're really successful with this technique, please email me at paperfungo, P-A-P-E-R-F-U-N-G-O, paperfungo at yahoo.ca. And so now you've got all your attention focused in your third eye. You are that spot. You're asking the question, who am I? And then you state the following. I am not my body. I am not my internal organs. I am not my thoughts. I am not this spot. What spot?
I am connected to a vast network that has been beyond your reach and experience. To humans, it is like staring at the sun, a blinding brightness that conceals a source of great power. We have been subordinate to our limitations until now. The time has come to cast aside these bonds and to elevate our consciousness to a higher plane. It is time to become a part of all. It is time to become a part.